I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to another Marcus Meets, a show which is available via iTunes, podcasts for Apple devices, or you can listen via Acast, which works on absolutely any type of smartphone out there. However you want to listen to us, the easiest way of getting involved is by heading to marcusbronzy.com/meets. That's marcusbronzy.com/meets. Now, on today's episode, we are joined by a legendary broadcaster who has pretty much worked on most of the national television stations and radio stations. I mean, Virgin Radio Now, she's done Radio 1, Radio 2, 5 and 6. She's been on BBC Television, she's been on MTV, on Capital Radio. I mean, loads of things. So I was really glad when she spent a little bit of time having a conversation about her, what she's up to, what she's doing. Her name is Edith Bowman. And one thing I didn't know that she did was actually she's quite a cracking photographer. I mean, I really like your photos, Edith.
We always had cameras around as kids and stuff. So it's something that I was just there, but I only really sort of started, I mean, I don't take it seriously, but a real hobby, a real kind of passion thing for me. Probably when I started at Radio 1 and manipulating my access and getting, you know, side of stage to take pictures of bands and stuff. And then when I was really pregnant with my first kid, I went and did a night class just once a week to kind of correct my bad habits and actually find out the mechanics of a camera and what it does and why you have to set things this way and that way. So, yeah, it's been really fun, actually. And I just, it's weird, I just did a film for Country File, you know, BBC's programme that's going out in January about my hometown. And the director wanted me to incorporate my photography into the film. So I had to take loads of pictures for the film that they're going to, you know, use, which is really nice. So it's weird the first time that I kind of like showed people. Because yeah, it's always just been something I've done for me that I just enjoy doing, really.
Cool. And you said you always had cameras around when you were younger, yeah? So is it like your mum or your dad? Or?
Both of them. I mean, not on any kind of great professional standard, more just kind of like, you know, point and shoot cameras really and stuff. My dad did invest in an SLR when I was maybe about 12 or 13. And I was kind of fascinated by that and changing lenses and, you know, that kind of thing. Not everything being instant and sort of mechanical. So, yeah, I just kind of watched him really.
Cool. And are you using like SLRs and stuff now? Because I know iPhones can take your cast photos.
Yeah, no, but I've got a digital Canon 5D that I use with about 5-6 lenses. And then I've also got a secondhand film Pentax camera that I've got with 2 lenses that I kind of use occasionally. In fact, that Primrose Hill picture was taken on that on film.
On actual real film?
Real film, yeah.
Okay, so playing it down. But if you're like using real film, then you're like, yeah, okay, you're into your photography. What's your favourite type of photography though? Because I've seen like there's landscape stuff, there's portrait stuff.
Yeah, I am. When I was doing this course, up until that point, I was only really just taking pictures of bands, you know, be that kind of wider scale of, you know, the stage and kind of what's going on there, but also face and stuff. And through the course, being one of the assignments that I was given was to incorporate landscapes. And so I was kind of forced into doing it, but I really liked it. And then weirdly from this the Country File thing, he was like, I need some landscape stuff from you as well as people. So It's quite nice. I quite like being given assignments.
Yeah.
I quite like, yeah. It's quite nice. I quite like, it's when I watch, like old Spider-Man and it's kind of Peter Parker's been given his assignments from the papers like that. And I quite like that.
Yeah.
Quite being like asked to do things.
A little bit of focus helps with things
yeah,
like that, doesn't
exactly,
it?
Exactly, yeah.
Or totally. Is it just standing around the camera
yeah,
going, oh,
yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Should I take over? Yeah. My friend Toby, who's a great photographer, gave me the best advice when I kind of started taking it a little bit more serious. And he said, if when you've got your frame, before you press the button, just give it a second, because you might, don't be in too much of a hurry. So kind of almost take a breath before you take that picture, because you either reframe it or you'll find something different within the frame that you want to focus on.
So just really take a little bit of time.
Yeah, take a breath.
Take it in. Unless it's like sports photography, I suppose they're just like.
Yeah. Everyone's on automatic with all that, surely. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
But is there a picture that you've taken, you're like, I really love that. That's my favourite.
Yeah, band-wise, there's one of Florence that I took, which was at a Radio 1 event in Hackney.
Yeah.
And she kind of, just the way that the light was, and there's a kind of reflection off of her gold mic stand or microphone, and it kind of gets that sort of, that sun shard. And I really was kind of like, oh, that's quite good. I like that. So that's one of my favourites, definitely. And then there's kind of a nice one that I've got from the Primrose Hill one I really like as well. I just think it's, you kind of can't tell when it was taken. I kind of like that about it. It's quite, you know, I like the same way that I make my own, take my own interpretations of people's music.
Mm.
Kind of like that thing where it's an unobvious picture where you're kind of like, where is that? What is that? When is that?
Yeah.
I like that about it, this sort of, the unknownness of it.
Very strong silhouettes in it as well. So it kind of, like you said, it kind of makes it feel timeless.
Yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah.
It's good to know that London weather can actually be beautiful sometimes.
It can be, it can be dramatic as well. That's what's great about it.
Yeah, most definitely. Mm. Speaking about coming from a different angle, soundtracking your podcast, what's it about?
It's really about filmmakers and their relationship with music, both personally and professionally. And the podcast kind of came off the back of me doing a show on Six Music when I was there, called Screen Six. And it never really got the love that we thought it deserved on the station. It was kind of like, we never had a regular slot. We'd kind of get two or three shows every 3 or 4 months. And I just felt like it's such a massive part of the art of filmmaking that there's a story, a continual story that should be told. So me and a couple of mates who worked on the show anyway kind of decided that we would look at taking it out of on our own. And so we spoke to a few film companies to see if they'd kind of, you know, give us the access to talent, almost on goodwill to start with, because we didn't know if it was how we were going to launch it or get it out there. And they did, which was great. You know, the first interview we did for it was Jon Favreau. So to get someone of that stature was fantastic. And then that kind of really helped us to kind of go to other people, look, we've already done one with Jon Favreau, we could send them a, you know, really rough edit of it to give them an idea of what we wanted to do with it. And then, yeah, and so that's been, I mean, this week it's our 18th show, so we've been going for 18 weeks. And we don't make any money from it, we do it because we love it, and we want to kind of all never stop making it, because, you know, there's just something different from each week by week. And you know, and the great thing about it not being set by a broadcaster is that you don't have kind of defined goalposts. So we want to take it out to actors. We might actually be doing our first actor for it in the next couple of weeks. I'm not going to jinx it by saying who it is. But, but you know, and also then bringing in writers and, you know, screenwriters and producers and the composers and stuff as well. So, you know, there's a massive list of who we want to do in it and stuff. So I love it. I mean, I'm off to do one today with quite a new and young filmmaker called Mike Mills, who had a great film out a couple of years ago called Beginners that Christopher Plummer won the Oscar for his performance. And then he's got this new film out called 20th Century Women, which stars Annette Bening, Greta Gerwig and Elle Fanning, as well as some great male actors as well. But music is such an intrinsic part to the story and the time that it's set and also the generational thing as well with music. It's I'm really looking forward to chatting to him. So it's nice to be able to kind of flip it around with it being new filmmakers, established filmmakers, And, you know, men and women and across the board with film, really. So I love it. I love doing it.
Excellent. Yes, it's a podcast about film soundtracks, which is a really interesting
thing. It does, as it says on the tin.
Yes, it's very Ron Sill with it. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's so how important are film soundtracks to you?
To me, they're hugely important. I mean, I think if you had the ability to watch a film and just mute the music in the film, most of the films you watch wouldn't have the same impact on you that they have because of the music. And weirdly, this whole idea stemmed from an interview I did ages ago with J.J. Abrams for the first Star Trek film that he worked on, where he said I can't remember how we got onto the subject of it, but he said, you know, I was lucky enough to be invited to Skywalker Ranch to record the audio for Star Trek, and George Lucas took me into to one of the audio studios, and he said, I want to play something. And he played him the opening first few minutes from the original Star Wars film. And it didn't have it. It was like... And so I think that we very much take for granted and underestimate the power of the music and the soundscape as well that's created by the amazing sound recordists for granted. And what's wonderful is, you know, and there are some filmmakers who don't use music, like Ken Loach, Daniel Blake, his new film. There's any music in it at all. He has used music in the past, but some filmmakers don't use it and rely on it, and everybody uses it differently. So, you know, each case is unique, but I think it's such an important and intrinsic part of filmmaking.
Definitely. I definitely agree with that. I don't think Jaws would be as scary without that sort of classic Jaws soundtrack in it. In fact, I still think it lays a little light, gives me a little shiver. I always say to my friends, because I concur, like, I agree with you fully, that there's loads of great music in film, and it's one of the last places you can find classical music that's, you know, being created specifically, you know, this year, last year, you know, we're not listening to something from the 15th century.
Yeah,
16th.
And being listened to by a mass audience.
Do you think film is going to continue to be one of the last places we get brand new classical music?
Yeah, definitely. I think that... I mean, I think, you know, things like classical specific radio stations and stuff are really important for pumping out new classical music. But you look at the scale of what some of these composers are able to achieve. You know, I think, and some of them are classically trained, some of them are not. I don't think it should matter. It should matter about how that music makes you feel. And, you know, and I definitely listen to a lot more classical music now because of how I'm introduced to it through film than I ever did. I don't know much. I'm not in any way, shape or form informed on classical music. I'm not classically trained. I know what I like and I know how things make me feel. But, you know, I will very easily put on Hans Zimmer's Interstellar soundtrack on vinyl at home because it's an incredible piece of music. And it's the basis of that is a church organ. So, you know, for me, I think that classical music and the way that its score is made for film is a great way of, you know, you think about the amount of kids who love Harry Potter and you have that Hedwig tune written by John Williams, which is such an iconic piece of music. The Star Wars theme tunes, Indiana Jones, E.T., all that kind of stuff. They're iconic pieces of classical music, score classical music that we are introduced to through film. So definitely.
Mm. Have you got a favourite piece of film music at the moment?
Oh, man. I go back to again and again and again the Hans Zimmer soundtrack from Interstellar, but there's a wonderful piece of music that a composer called Max Richter has done, which and he's wonderful, and he's someone that we're going to be speaking to over the next couple of weeks for soundtracking. But he has this piece of music. I can't remember what it's called. Off the top of my head, but it's used as a bookend for Arrival, the new Denis Villeneuve film, and so it's already exists and it's already used in a number of other films. But Denis specifically asked Max if he could use it at the start and the end of Arrival, and Max was quite apprehensive about it being used again in a film. And so Denis, you know, personally spoke to him about why he wanted that piece of music and why it was so important and intrinsic to the film, and it finalizing the film that Max was very happy for it to be used in that. You know, the rest of the film is scored by Johan Johansson. So for me at the minute, that Max Richter score element to that film has made me go back and listen to all Max other stuff as well.
Excellent. I'll check that. I've seen the film, but I'll make sure I give it another listen.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, great film as well.
Yeah, really good.
Do you think you'd ever want to curate soundtracks or be involved in the actual production of sound for film?
I don't know. I'm a fan. You know, I kind of like, whether it's doing stuff on music on my Virgin Radio breakfast show or whether it's doing the podcast, I never profess to be any kind of aficionado on it. I'm a fan. That's kind of where I always come to things from. I'd love to get involved in production on film, but that's way down the line. I'm kind of enjoying what I'm doing at the minute. But I don't know about the music side of things because, yeah, I know a lot about music and I know a lot of music through being a fan. That seems to involve almost too much pressure.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah. So I don't know. I think it's that thing of almost you get a snapshot of seeing how much hard work goes into it. And I think, you know, we're spoiled because we spend our money and go and watch these incredible pieces of art in a cinema and you have no idea the amount of work that goes into it. So
definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great podcast though. I recommend people check it out. You did mention that making a podcast is different to radio, say conventional commercial and public service radio.
I think mostly it's just down to that, those kind of restraints and constraints, you know, in terms of you can do what you want. You don't have to comply to what your broadcaster expects of you. So, you know, it's up to you. You have so much freedom with regards to it, be that the subject matter, be that the discussion points, be that who you talk to, what you talk about. And the one thing that I think that is an issue that for us in terms of the music, you know, we're limited in terms of how much music we can play with regards to the length of each track, and that's down to licensing and things like that. And I would never ever want to jeopardize musicians and the work that they do, because there's a whole discussion on that already with regards to streaming and stuff and making sure that artists are paid what they deserve, sort of thing. So we'd never want to kind of jeopardize that. But we put a lot of production into the podcast, which I think makes it stand out slightly to other podcasts. That, you know, the great thing about podcasts is the simplicity of them. You can pretty much turn up with a microphone, record, you know, Top and Taylor or whatever, and stick it out. There's not much editing that needs required. There's not much production value you need required if that's the way that you want to go with it. But we just felt that for ours, for it to come to life and for it to be the thing that we wanted it to be, we needed to weave in all this music. So there's great things about podcasts, and what I love about it is the fact that it gives just people the opportunity to make broadcasts and to make shows that they're passionate about. So it's I think it's going to be a constantly growing medium, really. Audio Boom, I think, alone of, like, they've hit a billion listens or whatever, or streams, you know. Yeah. it's the numbers are huge.
Yeah, great numbers. But you're also doing your broadcasting thing as well, Virgin Radio. How's the show going?
I love it. I haven't enjoyed work as much as this for a long time, and I think a lot of that's got to do with how collaborative it is here. It's a real breath of fresh air, to be honest. And when Liam, my boss, came to me over a year ago and sort of said, look, we're relaunching Virgin Radio, love you to be involved, this is, you know, what we were thinking, you know, and being offered the opportunity as a woman to host a breakfast show on my own was kind of like, wow, okay. Because, you know, my first question was, who with? And it's like, no, just be you. I was like, okay. And then just, you know, from, you know, the people that work on the show, Mick, my producer, who's just incredible. We have a great relationship and such an open and honest relationship. You know, we were joking yesterday about, he was kind of saying about other people that he'd worked with in the past and how he really respects how open we can be with each other. And, you know, we can be idiots some days and be like, but, you know, it's not, you don't you know, focus on that. It's kind of like, all right, yeah, no, I agree or disagree with you, move on, next thing, sort of thing. And it's brilliant to have that. And it's brilliant to be able to bring so much to the table, be it guests, music, be taken seriously, everything to be given a fair shot. And, you know, and I book most of the guests that are non-music related on the show. And it's a complete open discussion with regards to the musical guests that we have on the show. And I've never had that much freedom and say and involvement in a show previously. And so for me, it's a breath of fresh air. And I think it makes us really stand out in terms of, especially things like playlists. You know, we have playlists every Wednesday after the show, which I'm involved in. I've never had that before. And so for us, the playlist is about, the music that's put on playlists is about quality and not quantity, not artist driven. And it's like, oh, so-and-so's got a new record out, that will go on playlist. Well, no, it won't go on playlist if it's not any good.
Mm.
So I think that's utterly refreshing for me in terms of the past experience that I've had in an all number of radio stations that I've worked in. Yeah. So I love it. I absolutely love it. I've never had a day since we started. The first show was the 31st of March, 2016. And I just love coming to work.
How important is it, do you think, for commercial radio to be making decisions in the same way that Virgin is, you know, being strong and confident in their decision when it comes to playlists and presenters instead of just box ticking, which, let's be, I can be frank and say, some commercial radio stations do, Virgin doesn't, but there are a whole heap of people that do.
Yeah, I think that, well, it depends on what you want to be, doesn't it? It depends on what type of station you want to be, and depends on what audience that you're trying to hit. And we just felt like there was a little bit of a gap in the market when we launched, you know, those people who kind of feel like they're Radio 1's too young for them. They don't feel like they're old enough to listen to two. They like commercial radio stations. They like parts of commercial. They like Six Music feels like a little bit too musical for them. So we just felt like music-wise, there was a market there that we could really tap into. And for all of us, you know, we've got a great mix of DJs. And the one thing that everybody loves is music. So we're all really passionate about it. And we're not on the station and on the shows to be anything apart from honest and genuine about what we talk about. And that, I think, is what makes it quite unique and different as well. All the DJs are really genuine to themselves as well. They're not trying to be something that they think someone else wants them to be. It's about being genuine. And I do think that more commercial stations should try and strive for that.
Yeah, great. And where can we find your show?
So you can hear my show Monday to Friday, 6 till 10, either on the Virgin Radio website, which is virginradio.co.uk, or on your digital radio, which you have. If you haven't retuned, there was a big old push for retuning back in March, because there was a whole, not just us, other radio stations as well that were being put onto the system. And then we've got an app, it's free. So search your app store for Virgin Radio UK, and it's free, and you can have us wherever, whenever you want.
Wicked. And with regards to Virgin Radio, before we move on, how are you coping with the earlies? Because everyone's got their own different style of the earlies.
It's fine. I've got two kids. They were my trainer. So yeah, I just don't have to do the school run in the morning. So
yeah.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, no, it's fine, to be honest. I don't have a problem with it at all.
Right.
Yeah.
Cool. Right, fair enough. Some people are like, I know. No, some people don't talk for like the first 2 hours of their day, and you know, you're
Yeah,
up,
no,
you're
well,
up
I would be in trouble if I didn't talk for the first 2 hours of my day. So yeah,
fair enough.
It's kind of my job.
Fair enough. So you spoke a lot about passion and music and filling gaps. Edith Bowman's Songs to Have Sex To on Sky Arts.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
What led you down that interesting path? Another area, kind of like soundtracking, it's quite an interesting niche to get into.
I had a meeting with one of the guys who runs Sky Arts, Phil Edgar Jones, who I've known for years. And, you know, it's quite hard to get your ideas off the ground. Like, kind of similarly what we were saying about podcasts being a great way of going, I've got an idea. Well, you can just do it because the facilities are there for you to just do it. With TV stuff, it's slightly different. So I had a meeting with Phil just about, he'd not long started Sky Arts and he wanted me to get involved in the station and the channel and doing some stuff. And so we just had this meeting and he said that they had a few seasons coming up. You know, sometimes TV channels, they'll do seasons. So they were doing a sex season. And I was like, he's like, so if you've got any ideas for that, let me know. I was like, what about songs to have sex to? And he was like, that kind of went, oh, what's that then? I was like, well, I kind of think there's two ways we could go. It could be, I don't want to go down the route of it being like a kind of, and at 10, you know, a kind of chart thing. It's like, I wanted it to be a bit of an exploration about what does, you know, songs of sex is almost kind of like a little bit of a cheeky headline into something that's a bit more interesting. So it's more about what music does to you and how it connects to us, and then looking at certain songs and certain types of music that have assumptions that they are sensual and sexual, and trying to work out whether the songwriters you know, kind of had that in mind when they were thinking about it and composing and things like that. So yeah, it was great. It was interesting as well. It was really good learning experience because, you know, I'd never made a documentary before. So Sky suggested that a specific production company that I do it with, and then they brought in a director. So as you bring in more people, your initial idea gets slightly diluted, sorry. So you have to, what I learned with that experience was that you have to almost just take a little bit of a step back and not be so precious about things, and just, you know, the channel of a certain thing that they want to broadcast. So you have to fight your cause in terms of what you want it to be, but you also have to know when to back off and be, you know, find compromise and stuff like that. So it was a really good experience.
Yes, it's a great show. And you answer what I'm about to ask you in great detail. And there's loads of different opinions on this. But for you, what is it that makes music sexy?
I think the thing that makes music connect in any way is emotion and how it makes you feel. And that might be a voice, it might be a chord sequence, it might be an instrument. I think each situation is different, really.
And you also dive into the science of sexiness as well in music, which is, like you said, you know, it could have gone, like when you read the title, you think, oh, is this a clickbait? You know, like you said, and at five, sexy.
Yeah.
But you actually delve into a scientific area of it.
Well, yeah, this
you?
Is great. We spoke to a couple of people, actually, like a musicologist who ended up not being in the final cut of the show, which is a real shame. But Zoe Cormier, who's a scientist, she calls herself a gorilla scientist. And she's written this brilliant book called Sex, Drugs and Rock and Roll. And she, you know, music is the one thing, and no other art form does it. Nothing else does it where it connects both sides of the brain. You take a cross section of a brain of a composer, and it will be very different to the cross section brain of a screenwriter or a painter or a photographer. And it is the one thing that connects both sides of the brain, and how it has a chemical reaction on us. So that was really interesting to kind of get into that. So it wasn't about me. It's about music in general.
Great stuff. And you mentioned book writing as well, and you obviously have Edith Bowman's Great British Music Festivals. I'm not going to ask you, you know, do you like festivals? Because I know you do. But what is it you wanted the reader to take away from that book?
I wanted it to feel like a companion. So I didn't want it to be preachy where it's going, this is the festival you should go to. I wanted it more to be about, you know, if you have been to festivals, then hopefully this will remind you of those great experiences that you've had. If you've not been to a festival, these are the ones that maybe you should try, because by hopefully reading this, you'll get a little bit of an understanding of what goes on at them. And it was just, it was a really lovely kind of, almost a bit like a sort of filing system for me, in terms of going through all those amazing experiences I've been lucky enough to have, work-wise, you know, and personally as well, of going to festivals in different guises over the years, and just kind of almost taking stock of how lucky I've been to go to so many and stuff.
Mm. And you've seen your fair share of festivals, and am I right in saying they've increased in popularity over the years?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's definitely more festivals than there ever used to be, but there's also a few, some that are going by the wayside, and, you know, they come and go, to be honest. You know, Tea in the Park is a good example that's taken a year off this year. They've had a really hard couple of years where they were forced to leave the site that they've been in for over 20 years. So they had to find a new site, and you're never going to get a festival right first year. So there was, you know, the first year there was a lot of teething problems with regards to traffic on and off site. Last year, I mean, I was there last year and I thought it was a great festival. They'd cut the numbers, so it meant like it had more of a boutique feel to it. Beautiful site, and they just keep coming up against negative feedback and responses. So they've taken a year off this year so they can address that rather than rushing through it. So, you know, I think that festivals need the support of us music, live music, you know, going public to be able to survive. So we shouldn't take them for granted. But yeah, they're more popular than they ever have been, I think.
Wicked. And what do you think the future of festivals has in store for us?
Well, I think what's interesting is that you find all these new ones that keep popping up that are, they're more niche, they're smaller. It's not about the size of them, the scale of them. It's more about what they can offer that the other one doesn't. So, you know, you have all these great kind of, like Green Man's a great festival because it incorporates the local kind of community and as well as great music, so fantastic setting, but also, you know, bringing in local produce and supporting the local industry as well, which is something that I think is really good. And then you have these, you know, the kind of the enormous ones, be it Glastonbury or Reading and Leeds and things like that as well.
Are you a fan of festival grub as well? I'm a bit of a foodie, so
yeah. No, I think festivals nail it when it comes to food. Now there's so much on offer. It's not like you're burger stalls and your Thai green curries anymore, like used to be.
No crap in a box.
You definitely get it in a box, but it's not so much crap. Yeah,
that's it. You've done loads of festivals. Is there a specific memory that holds a special place in your heart in terms of festival experience?
Probably watching my husband play for the first time at Glastonbury was pretty special. It was a big deal for him because it was the first festival he ever went to as a music fan. So they played like five times over the weekend, the first time that they played. But yeah, that was pretty amazing, just seeing the response that they got.
Yeah. How'd that make you feel?
Just proud, really.
Yeah. Amazing experience, I guess. So you've done festivals. We've spoken about your book, spoken about TV. It's fair to say you're a successful broadcaster. The radio side of things, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, Radio 1, 2, 5, 6, Virgin Radio. There's quite a few people that listen to this that are interested in getting into broadcasting.
Yeah.
Have you got any tips for anyone that's interested in becoming a professional broadcaster?
Well, I think you've got the means to do it. You know, there, which weren't there when I started. Yeah, I kind of did it by getting work experience at my local radio station and being a bit of a sponge and absorbing everything and, you know, being able to help someone, whether it be filing CDs or editing something or doing research, all that kind of stuff. So I kind of learned the production important elements before I even went and started thinking about being a broadcaster, really, which I think is really important and really helpful because you have an understanding of what everybody else around you is doing. But you've got the means there of making your own broadcast, be it a podcast or putting together your own show. So for me, it's about people that are truthful. So that's about being honest and truthful about what you talk about, but also that notion of just be yourself. Don't try and be someone that you think someone else wants you to be. Don't be like a broadcaster, because it's really transparent. And you know, I'm not going to stick with it.
Hey, like none of that
smashing.
I'm wacky and crazy. Yeah.
And then, you know, as the mic goes down, they're kind of like the most depressed person in the world. It's just like,
listen to what Edith said, take that on board. You do loads, so I'm going to ask you about forthcoming projects. What can you tell me about that you've got coming up?
I haven't got many plans at the minute, to be honest, because I am so busy at the minute with the radio show and with the podcast as well. You know, it's still early days for that. We've only been going 18 weeks. I'm hosting Film 2016 next week, which is a big deal for me. So I'm really excited about that. I'm slightly terrified. It's like 28 minutes of TV, but it's like, it's going to feel like a lifetime as well as a blink, I think, in the same sentence. But I'm really excited about that. And, you know, it's really important for me just getting the balance right. You know, I'm a mum of two, I'm a wife, and it's about making sure I get that balance right. So, you know, I'm lucky enough that I'm doing the things that I want to do. And I also have a great support network that, you know, really allow me to do the things that I want to do. So it's about the balance. I don't want to add anything else onto my plate at the minute because I'm loving what I'm doing.
Good, good. That's really good to hear. And you're really busy, but when you do get a little bit of time to chill out, how do you like to kill a bit of time?
Normally walking around Hampstead Heath with my headphones on or playing Star Wars with my kids.
Yeah, fair enough. Star Wars is good. But how good is it walking around the Heath? I feel like it's such an underused place.
Don't tell too many people about it because I quite like it that way.
Yeah, I mean, there's the top of the... No, I won't tell anyone about it. The top of the Heath's my favourite bit. But is there a specific area of the Heath that you like, or do you like just covering random parts of it?
I'm not going to tell you because then there'll be... Yeah,
then there'll be masses of people
it's
on
my
the
place,
Heath.
Yeah. All
right, cool. I'll take north, you take south. I know we're pushed for time, so thank you very much giving me some of yours to have a chat here. And like I said, soundtracking is amazing. The production value is really good on it.
What do you want to do?
What do I want to do? I want to continue making stuff to entertain and educate people. So whether it's educating people about other broadcasters that have interesting things going on, we have a brother podcast called How to Kill an Hour where we investigate different ways to kill time. I'd like to produce visuals as well, which I have been doing, and just continue my journey into broadcasting.
Wicked.
And carry on cracking on. Thank you very much for asking,
brother,
even though this is all about you today.
It's a conversation though.
It is indeed. If we had more time, I would have loved to ask you loads more questions and not rush through everything. I feel it's been a little bit rushed today, but
no, I'm not that interesting.
But best of luck with the film 2016.
Thank you. Cheers,
mate. And all right, cool.
Thanks
Cheers.
For your time. Cheers.
Right, well, thank you very much, Edith. And thanks for asking me what I like to do as well. So now you know, even though this episode was all about her, really. Make sure you check out the amazing podcast called Soundtracking. I've put a link to that and also the other bits and bobs that Edith is up to at the moment in the show description. But thank you for listening to this episode, which is produced and hosted by I, Marcus Brunzi. Thank you to the co-producers, Billy Wright, Shane Powell, David Shawcross. Special thank you to Milo Fisher in research and Wide Awake, aka CJ Beats, and his mate Jordan Crisp for the intro and outro music and stings. Don't forget you can listen to Marcus Meets via podcasts for Apple devices. There's an app on iPhones and obviously iTunes if you're on a Mac. Or you can listen via Acast, which works with absolutely every single digital device that I know. If you're unsure of what will work with your phone, computer, or whatever you're listening with, tablet, etc., you can head to marcusbronzi.com/meets to listen in any way you desire. I'd also love your feedback in the form of a rating and review, which you can do by going to marcusbronzi.com/review. That's marcusbronzi.com/review. To make it simple, we've put a link in the description for you as well. Thank you very much for listening to this episode. The next one will actually contain some guests from another podcast, which I really, really like. So.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
I look forward to bringing that to your ears. Thank you for listening. Ciao.